huge. I mean, it's like a man. It's big.
Kane's son.
You still don't understand what you're dealing with, do you? Perfect organism.
Just tell me one thing, Burke. You're going out there to destroy them, right? Not to study. Not to bring back. But to wipe them out.
That's the plan. You have my word on it.
Happy Alien Day from Perfect Organism, the Alien Saga Podcast.
Welcome to Perfect Organism, the Alien Saga Podcast. Happy Alien Day. We're here with a very exciting roundtable behind-the-scenes look at our new film that just released on the channel. And I'm Patrick, and I'm joined today by...
Christian Motzka. And I have with me John Dernley, who was our cinematographer and editor, Sarah Motzka, who did our makeup, and Justin Maxwell, who did our sound design. And of course, Patrick did the score. So this is sort of the creative team that brought this together.
I did. And we've been doing this kind of asynchronously a little bit. You know, people have been going on cruises, people have been traveling, people have been working on different things, all at different kind of rates of speed. And we are here in the very home stretch. We are recording this the day before it releases. It's been a crazy journey, and I'm really excited to kind of talk about it today. So Christian, you want to get us rolling?
Sure. So I should just say, I mean, obviously Sarah is my wife, but Justin is her cousin, and John is my longest serving friend. So we've been making things together for about 20 years. Is that about right?
About right.
Yeah.
Yes. Scary. 2006 was the first one I did with you guys.
That's right. What, John, why do you continue to make movies with me?
No, I've always had fun working on stuff, creative stuff, aside from professional soul-sucking reality TV and corporate videos and things like that. So it's good to get that out of my system and then be able to go back to my normal grind. And it can be very... detached from creativity in a lot of ways. So it's great to be able to do something creative and fun and not have to worry about, you know, whether the lawyer signed off on the dialogue or.
Well, Christian and I have been brainstorming. I think that's one of our favorite things to do, is that we just talk all the time. I think that's how we're still together. We're just constantly brainstorming and talking. And I actually started doing special effects makeup before we even met. And so our relationship has also always been built on this creativity of like, okay, what else can we do, make, work on, think about? And so it's really fun to see a project like this come this far. We are really excited.
How about you, Justin?
Put it this way, I don't do as many of these as I'd like, these kind of projects. And yesterday I spent 4.5 hours in a chair without moving or eating and didn't realize I'd done it. Until it came time to pick my child up from the bus. And I said, oh, so if something is going to make me lose time this much and dive so deep into something that, you know, as you know, like I was very deep into this, then I do not say no.
So take us back to the beginning of this project. Like, how did this come together? It's been gestating for a while, right?
Well, that's the funny thing. On one hand, it's been 12 months that we've been working on it. But on the other hand, it's been 12 years because... this all goes way, way back. I guess it was 11 years ago. Some friends of ours had made a very successful web series called Ragged Isle. And so we were really interested in this idea, Sarah and I, of making an episodic web series. And out of that came this thing called The Last Flight of the Freya 7, where we were going to do 6 episodes. And it's funny because the story was about a ship that docked at this space station called Narthex Station. And there's aliens and all the stuff's happening. And the final image of it is the main character, Captain Harker, adrift in space in a spacesuit. And then 1 year later, Alien Isolation comes out, ship docks at the space station, there's aliens, and the final image is the main character floating off in a spacesuit. I'm like, are you kidding me? Because it was in the zeitgeist, apparently.
Litigation's ongoing. we're owed.
And so we made one piece of Freya 7 about 8 years ago, but it's always sort of been kicking around in my head. And so when the opportunity to make a film for Perfect Organism came along, originally I wasn't going to go in that direction. We had a whole other thing going on. I had this idea based on an Ambrose Bierce short story called Occurrence at Owl Creek Bridge. And Peyton, the main character, his name actually comes from that story. So he's sort of the last vestige of that. But as it developed, the idea of actually looping it back into this Freya 7 mythology really appealed to me, especially because Kenya Hall, who plays Captain Harker in this iteration, was our pick 8 years ago, 11 years ago even, to be this character. So to finally have that reunion, and the character that Will Stewart, our other lead, was meant to play back in the day, I thought he looked a lot like Jay Benedict, the actor who plays Newt's father, Russ Jordan, in Aliens. And so we were going to go off on this route of him being Russ's brother and do all this. But long story short, this all these little elements have been kind of percolating and coming together. And the final one that really kind of sparked this was having Trevor Stedman did a cameo back in our Freya 7 filming just before he died. And because we'd intended that to be part of a series, we'd fed him one extra line. And so he recorded it. He did a really good job with it. But we just had this piece that never had a home. And so when it came time to make this new film, I just looked at this piece of footage of this actor who I really liked, who has passed away. I got permission from his family to use it. And we actually built this story around just this little snippet of who could be talking to, you know, what does it represent?
That is a longer gestational process than I think I even realized that 11 years ago this kind of started. Yeah. So when did this particular story kind of take shape? I feel like the first time I saw a draft of it was maybe about like 9 months ago or something. How was the writing process, Christian, for this?
Yeah, it would have been about 9 or 10 months ago because we shot the first footage last July. And a lot of this came from John lives in Pennsylvania. We're up in Maine. But we get together periodically throughout the year. So we sort of based our schedule around when we'd all be in the same place. And so, yeah, the first round of filming was around the 4th of July, I think. So I'd had this idea from even a year earlier. The Ambrose Bierce-based story needed a really believable, articulated facehugger, and we just couldn't locate one. So it's sort of, okay, what can we do instead? But the idea of someone being in an alien hive, that was really, really fascinating to me, both as a set to build and a makeup for Sarah to do. And so to play to the strengths, right? We were thinking of what we had for available props, sets, things like that, skill sets that we had. And yeah, it just kind of grew out of that.
I want to actually go to Sarah if that's cool next, because the makeup in this is like unbelievably good. And I would love if you could give our listeners some kind of like insight into how you came up with some of the designs for it and maybe some kind of interesting behind the scenes things about how it came together.
Oh yeah, cool. It's always fun. I love practical effects. Of course, you know, the happy medium is being able to combine both, but I really like this idea that we're all leaning into our strengths. And so I really did take some time to study like what some of this being encapsulated in a hive looked like in other films and in the original, and then just started going back to the basics and getting all of the gross, like all of the Vaseline and the viscous and the, you know, anything that you could get to just give that extra depth and give something for John to work with to light fantastically the way that he does. But all the old recipes, you know, all the stuff that the greats have been doing, you know, forever is what we love to do. So with the exception of, let's see, I don't know. I think we didn't even use that much blood. So as I was going to say, I'm not sure if I used my own blood recipe in this one or not, but it was more just like the nasty of like just being stuck with no place to go and no place to get out from. So
you used blood on one person I can think of.
Oh, you? Yes, I covered you in blood. Yeah. Yes, that's right, I did. Yep, not everyone gets to say that they murdered their husband, you know, on film. So yeah, I made Christian into a pretty nice dead body, and then, you know, just in the middle of recording, realizing we needed more stuff. It's like, okay, can you do this thing? And in like 20 minutes, I whipped up this really gnarly, like wound stuff for the flashback. That was also Christian. So, bloody mess.
Sarah is always, her skill set is always ridiculously overpowered for what we're doing. And so we actually got a lot of screen time this time, which is good because it's not always the case. So like it's obscured or it's dark or it's a quick cut or something. So she got a lot of screen time, which is great. I have some good shots of her with the bucket of goop, the slime that she's like, we're trying to get the right stretchy consistency. And she had a lot to do on this one.
Yeah, the makeup is definitely a center point of it. Yeah.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate that. It's really fun to be able to do that and to be able to flex every once in a while. Just like the rest of us, you know, we all have day jobs. We all have other stuff we do. And I don't get to make people look like a hot mess, you know, all day long. So it's fun when I can.
Well, as Christian knows and listeners know, my high watermark for practical alien effects is always if they make me feel like hungry for some reason. And I got to say something about this. It looks delicious. I don't know what it is. Something about the slimy stuff. Maybe I just have a weird appetite, but it looked delicious and terrifying at the same time. So congratulations, Sarah.
Yeah, right on. Thank you.
So going back to the kind of, I want to get to the shoot a little bit. And, you know, maybe we can talk post-production stuff after that. Take us to the actual shoot for this. This happened in a couple of stages over some time. And also, of course, features some amazing miniatures work by another member of our team, Xander House, who's not here with us at the moment, but I know has kind of shared some thoughts on it. Christian, can you maybe kind of take us into that a little bit?
Sure. So it's sort of funny, just by the scheduling of it, we shot the hive sequence in the heat of the summer. And Maine is not as hot as some places, but it was very, very warm in our shooting location. So you can actually see some real sweat mixed in with all the rest of it. And then the last day of filming, of live action filming, was the absolute dead of winter. And so the bloody arm that you see just quick in one of the flashback shots is my arm, and it was below zero. And, you know, Sarah's pouring blood on me. And, oh, man. So we kind of hit the extremes, I guess, of shooting in the worst of the year and the... No, it's actually all the worst. It was so super cold or super hot with very few in between. And we did shoot my character's death scene where the two kids find me. We actually shot in Pennsylvania because, again, we had this planned around when we'd have the ability to be in the same place easily. And I laid on a hard cement floor for many hours to get that quick shot. Then I had to return to Pennsylvania. Xander made these models for us, which were fantastic. And we just couldn't figure out where to fit them into our shooting schedule. So eventually we had them sent to John's house, and he and I set up a huge table in the basement with pounds and pounds of cinnamon and ground coffee to create the dirt. And I think we spent 3 days without ever seeing daylight, just moving the miniatures slightly, trying to get the shot just right. But he did beautiful work on those miniatures. And I think it really elevates the film.
It also sounds like, once again, delicious. I have to say, shooting with cinnamon and coffee grounds. Are you kidding me? I think, you know, it's honestly lunchtime. I haven't eaten yet, which could be kind of guiding some of this. But take us, John, into some of your side of things, because you were doing the lighting and all that kind of stuff as well, right?
Yeah. This has been a process from when Christian and I met in college. Like, we're always filming in austere conditions, in freezing cold or boiling heat, or in an attic, or an old World War II, big old metal tower we shot in the middle of the winter in. And we shot most of the film in the same 10 by 20 space footprint. And Christian had all the sets pre-built, and they were like on top of each other. So he'd move a wall, and we had the kitchen and the coffee station, everything next to the monitor. And then before that, it was the hive scene and everything. So he had it all planned out. So it was very, very, it flowed very smoothly. And it was easy to light. We tried to do mostly practical lighting, motivated from monitors or from, there's a rotating morning light in almost every shot, I think. And that gives us a lot of edge. And we had to do very minimal work to make it look real, or to make it look authentic, or at least accurate to the films. So it was great. You know, the best thing about short, small budget films is that it forces you to be creative, and it forces you to move quickly. and you don't have a lot of time to second guess things, and you have to, you know, put out fires quickly. So going from a reality TV background, that's the one benefit from it. It's always a learning experience, and it's always like a really fun puzzle to do. And our actors, Kenya and Will, were like amazing, and they were very patient, and they were like, there were some shum shots where we did multiple takes, and they were all usable. They're all great takes, and I had to like sit and and usually came down to my lighting was what decided. Like, okay, I didn't have that one quite, you know, set up quite properly, so we'll use this take over here. Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and we the sets I think that Christian built were really what sells the piece, and it's his attention to detail has always been fanatical. Yeah, it's that, but that's what creates the universe is the like the small details that you show, and the small, like the little tiny, like, you know, he's like, oh, we'll have a patch over here, and you'll be able to see when he turns his shoulder real quickly, and that's all he wanted. He didn't want to dwell on the shots and be like, show off all the props we had, because that's not what was important. What's important is the story. But that stuff like fleshes out the rest of the movie, and you're like, yeah, we could have lingered on that, but that's not what we're here for. We're here for the story. I think it's a very uncommon approach to have the filmmaking for a lot of people, is that they want to show every single thing on screen that they can all the time, and they want all their budget to show up, and so we had some great props and talented people, so that's what we leaned on.
You know, when Christian joined the show about, I don't know, 3 years ago or whatever, we became about 700% more detail oriented, which I really appreciated. It's been very helpful in many ways. I want to talk, you know, I know we're kind of getting close to time here. We're going to keep this short, but I want to talk about the creature a little bit, because, of course, we have an amazing alien in this film. And I know there's a special guest in the suit. Can you take us through that, Christian?
Yes. So 2 years ago, for my 45th birthday, I went down to a convention in New York City, got to meet Andy when I was there. And there was this guy, I was dressed in my Nostromo uniform, of course. And so people were saying to me, hey, there's an alien here. You got to go meet the alien. And finally, I come around a corner and here's this guy. And he is in this perfect alien costume, looked just like Giger's original. He wasn't as tall, but he's a skinny, tall guy. His name is Dennis Stiles. And so I hung out with him and his partner for the weekend because we had a nice complimentary look, you know. And at the end, I asked him for his contact information just to kind of file away, like on the possibility that we could do this. And he was very excited and very supportive of the whole process, very gracious with his time to come up and spend a couple of days with us. And of course, in the end, his scene is quite small, but I think it's more impactful that way. We have more takes, we have more angles, but we just needed, it's like John was just saying about the props. We can't just show the suit off, as gorgeous as it was. We just had to have the bit that was going to be the most important. And boy, I have some behind the scenes footage. We had a strobe going, and when the strobe hits the interior skull on that dome, it was nothing we could use in the film, sadly, but it was very, very interesting in the moment. So we had to keep turning the lights off to adjust things. And then I'd kind of shine my flashlight up and he would just be standing there motionless in the suit. So that was great. And our face hugger that we used was from Mario Benvenuto, who we interviewed a few months back, because he just happened to have one. The whole thing, the reason that I had to change the story for not having the right kind of face hugger, is like, oh, I've got one of those. You want to borrow it? So we got to have a face hugger after all.
That is awesome. And Mario, of course, for people listening to this, is the guy who made that alien escape room exhibit that he was on our show a few months, or maybe I guess late last year. And that was amazing too. Moving right along, you know, maybe I can give a little bit of insight into the music side, and then maybe we can go to like sound editing and kind of wrapping it up. Does that sound good?
That sounds great.
Cool. So Christian came to me with this idea that I loved. And I think this was also Sarah's doing, the two of you were talking, that this, because there's sort of noir inflected elements to this, it'd be cool to try to maybe get a saxophone in the score. And, you know, he was like, do you think there's any way to do that? I, you know, not to toot my own horn, my own saxophone. I was actually like very seriously into saxophone growing up. As you know, everybody knows I'm a composer. I play a lot of different stuff, but sax was something I was really passionate about all the way through high school. And then I went to college and I dropped my saxophone off at my parents' garage, and it stayed there for almost 20 years until like maybe 3 or 4 months ago. And I was like, Mom, is there still like a saxophone in the garage? And she's like, yeah, it's been holding up like gardening equipment, but if you want to check. So I was bracing myself for the worst because this thing's been sitting in this like sarcophagal enclosure for decades now. You know, I'm thinking it's not going to be playable. And I open it up and it looks exactly I mean, the notes that I had on the music were the same notes that I, you know, it was the last thing I wrote on that page, you know, in 2003. So I took it out and I had this moment where I was like, how do you play this again? And I like put my hands on it and just instantly I was like, oh, that's right. I know what I'm doing. And it was so fun. So I want to thank you first off for giving me an opportunity to like, you know, take this thing out of storage and give it life again. And now, you know, actually my son plays trumpet. So we've been jamming, doing a little brass band ever since we did the scoring for this. So thank you for that. It was an interesting challenge because we wanted it to be saxophone, you know, sci-fi noir in space, but not to sound like I'm trying to rip off Vangelis, which is hard because as you know, I also have a Blade Runner podcast and I'm a very big fan of his work. So, you know, Christian and I had a lot of back and forths on this to try to find the aesthetic center point for this thing. And basically the idea was we kind of started off as melodic as possible and then stripped it back and kind of abstracted it more until it got to this hazy midpoint where it still read as something noir influenced, but it didn't feel like it was something else, you know? And what was really fun is once we kind of got that, then I was like, oh, now I know what this is going to sound like. And then I got to do the creature effects with it, which was so much fun. And, you know, try to conjure the sounds of like, you know, buzzing hives of insects and things like that by just layering these John Zorn-esque saxophone parts all over each other. So that was just a lot of fun too. And harmonically speaking, it's related somewhat to all three of our previous audio projects that we've done in the film last year. And that I use a certain harmonic series slightly in this score that mirrors some of the harmonic series that I used in those. So the idea being when we put the soundtrack out, you know, at some point in the near future, it'll kind of feel like somewhat of a part, even though aesthetically it's very different because it's, you know, primarily saxophone. It also features the Waterphone, which has become a mainstay of our Perfect Organism projects lately. So I got to play the saxophone in a self-duet with a Waterphone, which maybe is the first time that sentence has ever been used. I don't know, but you know, it was very exciting. So thank you for the opportunity to do that. And of course, music is nothing without sound design. And that's of course where Justin comes in. So Justin, can you take us through some of the sound work that you did for this?
Absolutely. And I want Christian to help me a little bit with this. And I want to say I think your reality might be bleeding into mine a little bit, Patrick. I played saxophone all through high school as well. And I had a really nice old Selmer Mark VI tenor that I sold 20 years ago. And for some reason, right before I heard this score, I dreamed that I found that case and opened it up and the saxophone was exactly the way I had left it.
Whoa. Now,
I have not heard this story yet, but two nights ago, I had that very vivid dream. I opened the case, the saxophone was as I had left it, the key action was the same, and I played the instrument. So, what's the line from Twin Peaks where Agent Cooper says, I'm a very strong sender. I think that you may share that.
That's crazy,
that,
man.
That, you know, I may go off on a tangent a little bit, but I also feel like there's a bit of a gestalt thing that happens when you're working on a project like this. So for this project, basically, I mean, Christian and I just sat down and are trying to recreate a facehugger sound. And that's the fun bit for me is like, oh, okay, well, let's take this and we'll mold this and we'll make it brief and very to the point and high pitched. And what is that? And so again, when they were creating, and I'd never, you know, again, you find out this great stuff. So Alien for me is, it's preaching to the choir with you, Patrick, and everybody else here. It's like the pinnacle of sound design from any era of film. Today, we're living in a very loud world. We're living in a world where there's a lot of light and noise coming at us all the time. And what they did with rhythm and silence and sound in that film, you know, so, you know, I sit down here and I'm going, okay, how do we make these sounds seem like they fit and work as homage to that era and to that particular film while also kind of working for us? I guess that's where I'm coming from.
Didn't you use a period microphone too?
Oh, thank you, John. Yeah. So John, I hope I made John laugh when I came in and we had some microphone choices and I said, can we use this? Cause this is like basically the same exact kind of mic they would have used. So like Christian, I'm also super detail oriented. Again, sitting down and saying, I asked Christian yesterday, so with this dock rat, right now I have the sound of an empty beer can being picked up from the table. He's not the kind of guy that would leave an empty beer can. He'd crush it up and throw it on the table. does it matter that this he's taking his empty with him? And, you know, of course, Christian's looking at me like probably because I'm reminding him that he's that obsessive about set detail. And I'm saying, I'm that obsessive about the way these sounds are going to, is this making me emotionally feel the right way at this point? Is this floor made of metal? When Kenya's character sets her flashlight down, that floor is metal now. That it has a big kind of like a punctuation in the scene. And again, Christian, when he sits down, I get to say, does this matter? Because you know? It matters to me. And how much is this going to matter?
I had to laugh when Justin asked me that, because I made a big deal of wanting to shoot it with Canon, vintage Canon lenses, the FD lenses, which are very similar. They're cousins of the K35 they use for Aliens. Anyway, and I was, you know, I was excited to do that. And then Justin asked me, he's like, can I use a vintage microphone? I was like, I don't care. I'm half deaf anyway. It doesn't matter.
I don't want to rock the boat, but I've got this microphone that's like basically the mic, you know, that they would have used. And then I'm hearing it back now, though, and going, oh, yeah, you know, and all the dialogue in this film sounds right to me without having to work on it, without having to use a plug-in, you know, or some kind of technical jiggery pokery, as they used to say, you know, on the BBC.
So, yeah. To sum that up, though,
thank you.
John used the lenses that he thought were the most accurate, and I had no idea.
Right.
Justin used the microphone that was most accurate, and I had no idea. Sarah used the techniques that were accurate, and I had no idea. And and I brought the props. It doesn't matter to anyone else, but it matters to me that Peyton is drinking out of the same style glass coffee cup that Ripley gives her coffee to Gorman and Burke in the movie, blah, blah, blah. And Patrick, you didn't use a synthesizer for that saxophone. You went and dug out the real deal, and it shows. And the sound of it matters.
Amen. All the echoes from the past continue to resonate us into the future. And this film is so exciting. I know we need to wrap. Does anybody have any final thoughts they want to share before we do?
I'm going to buy a saxophone.
I hope, if nothing else, this inspires people to look in their garage, in their parents' garages, to see if there's instruments sitting out there. John, before we go, I do want to just, if we have a moment, just touch on the editing process, because I know that's something that, you know, you have an extensive background in, and it's something that I think is easy to overlook when people aren't familiar with it. It's why I stopped videography personally. I think it's extremely complicated. So can you take us a little bit through the edit and kind of how you chose what to use?
I've learned a lot in this process. Case in point being the titles we did. Christian built a practical title set with a transparent lower, Absolution is transparent, and Alien was metallic letters. And he had it all laid out, and it was really cool. And I shot it, and I did like five different title setups. We wanted to do them all practically, and I couldn't get the practical stuff that he built to work. So I was trying other things, and I figured out some stuff that I was okay with. We had a green screen and everything. And in the process of doing this, I learned a lot about VFX and things, and I could actually make the original sequence that he wanted to do work. But it helps me be better at being a shooter, because then I learn, like, you know, it's, you have in mind what you want to do later. So it helps you all around to be better. We didn't have the budget or the interest in doing a lot of special effects laden or, you know, CGI or anything like that. And I think it's better in the long run for us, because we, you know, there's a physicality to practical effects, and there's, you know, that's something that like CGI can't get quite right. And I think we would have been tempted to like run off and have, you know, facehuggers flying everywhere or something. And no, I think Christian would have reined that in, but.
I think it looks great. With that, I'm going to say, you know, thank you everybody so much. Thanks for having me be a part of this. This has been an absolute, you know, treasure of an experience for me. Thank you, Christian, for having the vision to see this thing through the end. I hope everybody's enjoying it. I hope you've already seen it, hopefully, if you're listening to this. If not, sorry, but have a great Alien Day, and we're really grateful to have you all. We have some new patrons to give a shout out to. We'll do that on the other episodes today, because this is kind of a short one. But thank you so much. Stay tuned for more to come, and happy Alien Day 2024.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you. Good to see you.
Thank you.